Hello friends, welcome back to another episode of In Too Deep. As always, I'm your host, Jack Rowland. Recording this intro out in Horsham, painting a big fat mural out in the country with Yuria. It's gone well. Biggest one to date. Today, I'm joined by visionary artist heavyweight Chris Dyer. Chris is a Peruvian-Canadian artist whose paintings are colourful, psychedelic and playful expressions of interdimensional beings and energies shrouded in colourful pattern work. Through his artwork and content, Chris projects vibrations of positivity, ideas of spiritual oneness, and consciousness expansion. His work spans across canvas painting, large-scale murals, illustrations, NFTs, skateboard designs, clothing, video blogs, workshops, and podcasts, just to name a few. If anyone knows how to make a successful career out of art, it's this guy. Chris has also dedicated a good amount of his adult life to the shamanic journey, working with plant medicines such as ayahuasca to heal, grow, and deepen his spiritual relationship with others, himself, and the world around him. Guys, if you're loving this free podcast and want to show a bit of support, jump on over to patreon.com/intodeeppodcast. Just for the amount of buying me a beer, you can support this show and help it grow. If you can't afford it or just don't want to, that is a-okay. But this podcast takes a lot of work, which I love to do. But if you want to jump on board and support me for the work I do, patreon.com/intodeeppodcast. It's early days. Often you add a little extra. I haven't figured out what that might be. Very open to suggestions. Would love to create an interactive community with you guys. Some online discussions, Discord perhaps. But at this point, any support for the show would be greatly appreciated. patreon.com/intodeeppodcast. All right, without further ado, let's get deep with Chris Dyer.
Is there a point to all this?
I think we're getting in too deep.
You don't apply.
Bad luck.
Well, I have one speed, I have one gear.
Go, 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 go.
I'll tell you when we're getting in too deep, too deep, too deep.
Chris Dyer, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good, Jack. How are you doing?
Very well, man. Thank you so much for joining me, dude. I really appreciate you. Appreciate your art and appreciate your time.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here and to talk to you all the way out in Australia.
Awesome, man. Hey, dude, so where exactly are you in Florida now? You seem to like move around a lot.
Yeah, well, I'm Peruvian Canadian, so I got homes in Montreal, Canada, and in a village south of Lima in Peru. But with COVID and the vaccination mandates, I just had to move to the States, where I had a little bit more freedom to do my thing. Mm-hmm. And I was in Denver for a year, but that wasn't really my vibe. And I recently moved to St. Petersburg, Florida, which is a chill part of this peninsula, and got myself a nice home in the sun, sort of in winter, but the sun shines and I'm in a t-shirt. So everything is blessed.
Nice one, man. Nice one. So, yeah, I mean, you just mentioned you're Peruvian. I've kind of checked out a bit of your story on your Instagram videos and things like that, and just some of the YouTube things you've done over the years. But so, yeah, you're Peruvian born, and you lived in – how long did you live in Peru for?
I actually was born in Ottawa, Canada, and I moved to Peru when I was 4 years old. And I grew up there till I was 17 years old. And and then I went back to Canada. And now I just visit my parents like once a year, usually at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I go there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Go to the mall, do Christmas and everything.
Nice one. I've never been to that part of the world, man, but it's well and truly up there on one of the looks like one of the most amazing places in the world. I mean, Machu Picchu, dude. Like, I mean, and I'm sure there's just so much more, but yeah, I mean, what's it like growing up in Peru? I suppose it's all relative, right? But
yeah, Peru's actually pretty fucked up country.
Right.
Like when people outside of Peru look in, they look at the nice parts like, oh, like the Andes and of course the ruins and maybe like the jungle and the medicine. So that's all the positive things that do exist in Peru. And Peru is very rich culturally, but politically it's fucked up. Right now there's like huge fights on the streets. people are dying. I myself don't even know who to root for because it's like, I don't know who are the goodies and the baddies. I think like it's almost like era is good and era is bad, but politics just confuse everything. And South America in general has a lot of communism taking over many countries, and Peru's the next target. And also it's very tied in with the narcotráfico, the cocaine traffic. So like owning Peru, a lot of people want to own Peru. So like people battle it out. And sadly, people fall for it and they fight between each other, you know, and then there's racism and like it, which shouldn't be there because all Peruvians are Peruvians, regardless of, you know, who had sex with who and what degree of pigment is in your skin. Like if you lived in Peru, you are Peruvian and you got the vibe and we shouldn't be fighting each other. So growing up in Peru, it was kind of difficult, you know, because like I'm like this like white Canadian trying to like adjust to the world in general. Well, I'm really an alien from a different dimension that's adjusting to planet Earth in general. But I started in Canada where things were kind of like mellow. And then all of a sudden I'm in Peru at 4 years old and, you know, the language changed and a lot of parameters changed. And throughout the 80s and 90s, it was like really like time of terrorism and fights and bombs and military and crime and poverty. So me being lighter skinned makes it that like, oh, shit, that guy is a vulnerable a target or he's got more money. And I would get mugged a lot, which was a little bit like unnerving. But, you know, and in general, South America has got this like very like macho, like crush or be crushed kind of vibe. That's not really my vibe. So in all honesty, as much as Peru is like a beautiful country with lots of culture and tradition and medicines, it was challenging for me to grow up there. And I'm kind of like, you know, traumatized by it. Wow. And only in my 30s, going back on vacation and seeing it with new eyes, not the eyes of somebody who's supposed to be Peruvian, but somebody who's just seeing it as a perhaps a foreigner, I was like, oh, I like this place. I don't have to identify myself as Peruvian or as what a Peruvian's supposed to be or look. I can just be whatever the fuck I am and enjoy the good parts. That coincided with me going to the jungle and started working with ayahuasca, and then going to Peru started to become a healing experience. It all depended on who I was hanging out with and what activities I was doing. Because when I was, you know, a kid in the 90s, I was just like a rambunctious skater, surfer, street gang member. You know, yeah. I was looking for trouble. So now I'll go once a year. I hang out with my parents. They live in the countryside. We got a little chunk of land, like a little humble acre where I can just sit in the sun and appreciate the birds and paint and eat good and be chill. That experience of Peru is great, but you can get everything there. It's a very potent country.
Wow, man, I bet you've had a massive kind of character arc throughout your life, right? I mean, growing up in that kind of environment, being mugged all the time, it would be pretty easy to, I don't know, you can either kind of crouch in, get small and be a victim, or you can actually like fight back and get pretty aggressive yourself. You know, I mean, those are kind of the options, right? Like fight or be beaten up on.
Right. And that's the vibe of Peru. It's like either man up, whatever that means, and be almost like a tough aggressor kind of character, or you will be the victim. And as a sensitive, artsy, kind of weirdo alien that I am, I was being a victim. And so in my teens, I joined the street gang. So they had my back if people wanted to, like, you know, attack me. I'd be like, oh, I'm going to call my street gang and I'm going to fucking demolish you guys, which is also hella whack. But I had to go through the motions of life to figure out that you don't, you know, fight fire with fire. You just got to kind of like let people go through their process. And if they got to go through negativity, like that's whatever they have to learn. And you just kind of got to like move back to love, back to God, back to source. But that also is a process to take off the armors that you put on to protect yourself throughout your childhood, teenagehood, etc. That is a difficult process because you feel so vulnerable and naked all the time. It's like, oh shit, I'm back to being a sensitive, misfit. But I gotta find my strength in that sensitivity, and that's been a process. Also, with many years working with the medicine, it's just kind of like taught me, like, hey, you're perfect just the way you are as a sensitive alien weirdo creature. That's cool, Chris, and just rejoice in whatever the fuck you are.
yeah, wonderful. Wow, I mean, yeah, it's just your artwork. I mean, your website is Positive Creations. Your artwork and your kind of message is just so much about positivity and color and celebration of life and stuff. And yeah, sorry to kind of dwell on this, but yeah, I am always really interested. It's really interesting to hear that stark contrast. And I guess, yeah, having to grow up a bit rough and, it actually takes a lot of work to choose positivity when those other roads can actually present themselves as easier at the time. But what was the extent of this street gang that you were in? Was this just kind of like young kids just kind of rolling around mugging people or just being tough? Or was it actually a bit more organized and sinister than that?
Okay, so to balance out what you're saying, I think that it's important if you're choosing positivity to have some experiences with the other side of the coin, with negativity, with the darkness, to the point that you get burned and you're like, oh shit, that's not the way. Right. Like, you can't just be like, oh, well, my guru or my family or whoever told me that being positive is good, so I'm gonna do it. No, you gotta have a range of experiences. So, I did a bunch of bad things as a kid, like even without my street gang, because I'm just kind of like a ball of energy. And if it's like, not going in the right direction, it's I'm causing some shit. The street gang thing came through. There was like a fad in my school. I went to like a wealthy boys school. Markham College, it was like a British school, and my dad would work really hard to get me in this schooling so that I would have a good future. But there was a fad in 1993 to go to the soccer stadium, to the dangerous part of the soccer stadium, because it gets divided by, how much you're paying. So the cheaper one has all the hood people.
Right.
So we would go to the hood section of the stadium, and that's where people are cheering for the soccer team, like jumping and singing super loud. And we would go to, to cheer for the team, and it was hella scary, especially, when you're lighter skinned in a country where everybody else is darker skinned, you are identified quite quickly as a different demographic. And we were throwing ourselves in it to go and get into this very exciting, let's cheer for a soccer team. Eventually the fad kind of like went away, and my rich boy friends kind of like started doing other things. But I really liked that environment because it was fucking wild. It was really scary. But at the same time, it was a place where like anything could happen, it was like super, like just like I could get all my negativity and aggression out. And as the months and years kept on passing in that environment, I met more characters. I joined tougher gangs. I was never part of the toughest gangs, but my gang was of the not so bad neighborhood of Lima. And because we were lighter and because we were from the not so bad neighborhood of Lima, it's almost like we had to prove ourselves like double, that we're not a bunch of pussies.
Right.
So we'd have to go out and fight. And the fights in this environment was basically at the end of the soccer match, you would find a big avenue where the fans from your enemy team and us, the fans of our team, would meet on a road head to head and battle it out by throwing rocks at each other. Oof. So it's kind of like everyone's just throwing rocks. You go back and forth. You're trying not to get a rock to the head. The goal would to perhaps be like grab somebody from the other side and steal his gang t-shirt or his flag, if he had a flag. The flags that you put in the soccer stadium that would come out on TV. I fought a little bit and got caught some rocks in the head. But my, as an artsy guy, I was more about like going out and tagging the streets with the name of my gang, or designing the t-shirts, or painting the flags that would then we would like put in our pants and get in the soccer stadium and then hang on the fence and get on TV, and always like recording with my VCR, like the news, and be like, oh, there's my flag. And then like, you know, this like ghetto publicity. And you know, I also got into some fights, and I also went to jail a couple times, and it was really scary, but somehow 14-year-old Chris really found it very exciting. I want to keep it going. And it actually all ended around age 19. I had already moved to Canada, but I was coming back to Peru for vacation, so I would go there for like 3 months in the winter vacation or whatever. And in one, it's a really long story, and it actually ties in with the first times I was doing psychedelics. So I'm 19 years old. Me and my friends did San Pedro, Huachuma cactus for the first time. And in Peru, you know what San Pedro cactus is?
Yeah, it's like absolutely.
They grow at the entrance of every house in Peru. And because it's kind of like, San Pedro, St. Peter, he protects your house. So if you put that cactus, it like protects your house. But it's also like code from the Inca culture that was smashed, that he has the keys to heaven. You know, so if you eat the right San Pedros, then you go to another dimension. But anyways, San Pedros are all over Lima. It's not an illegal thing. It's a traditional thing. So my friends, my teenager friends, we were like 19. I was 19. They were probably like 18, 17. We'd go around our bikes with a machete and a towel, and we would find the San Pedros that had enough lines, and we would chop them up, put in the towel, and just run away. And once we had enough of them, we would go to the beach and cook them for 4 hours and then drink it. And that was the first time I tripped. Like I was just starting to smoke weed, like probably that same month. Like I didn't smoke weed till I was like 18, 19. And all of a sudden I'm in Peru and all my friends were smoking weed. So I was smoking weed to catch up, and I was getting hella paranoid. But like, you know, I wanted to like get into it with them because my friends were super into it. And then all of a sudden I'm doing San Pedro and I'm tripping like for 12 hours at the beach with them. And in that trip, I put my toque or my beanie. I don't know how Australians call it.
Yeah, beanie. Yep.
Beanie. Okay. Yeah. In Canada, we call it toque.
All right. Yeah.
Anyways, I put it over my eyes, and the symbol of my soccer team appears, and it's the U. So it's a U in a circle. So it had like a face, and it's like, Christopher, are you coming to the soccer match tomorrow? And I was like, it's a big match. And I'm like, dude, I'm like 2 hours south of Lima. I'm tripping. I'm not going to make it to the match tomorrow. I'm sorry. It's like, what? I said, if you're not coming to see me, you said you were faithful to me, that you would cheer like in the goods and the bads, you have to come. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'll come tomorrow. So I pretty much tripped all the way to 6 a.m. And while my friends were going to sleep, I walked a couple kilometers through a desert up to the highway, took a bus all the way downtown Lima to a really gnarly neighborhood where my gang was meeting one of the toughest gangs, Locura. And we were going to hang out in like the worst neighborhood with the toughest gang, and then we're going to go look for a fight, to, you know, so that our gang would like, you know, get more respect and all this shit.
Right.
And I get there and I'm super tired. Plus I'm burnt out from doing San Pedro all night. And one of the locals looks at me, who like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, cause I'm white. And I'm like, oh, I am me. And he got really pissed off by that answer that sounded too philosophical. And he grabbed a beer bottle and smashed it on the ground and started going at me like, ah, what do you say to me, motherfucker? And I'm like, oh, my name is Christopher. So that's how that day was starting. And then we're like, okay, let's go out and look for a fight. So that neighborhood's not only it's like the most toughest, like ghettoest, hard neighborhood, but also it's the neighborhood that's kind of like owned by our enemies. our enemy soccer team, that's their neighborhood. So that's why the other gang was so tough, because to be in that neighborhood, they had to like really fucking be tough. So anyways, we're there, we're looking for a fight, and we find an avenue that we're seeing down, and we see a fight between two gangs. One of our gangs was like on the far end, and the enemy was kind of like in between. So we're like, oh, if we go at them from behind, we're going to sandwich them and we're going to fucking fuck them up and throw hella rocks at them and steal their t-shirts and their flags. And so we start going at them. And since our group was a little bit smaller than the other group they were fighting with, they had to go through us to, you know, try to escape the sandwich. And in that instance, it was our chance to fucking just go at them. So we're all just grabbing whatever's, I don't know why there's rocks on the floor everywhere in Lima, or at least in that neighborhood, but like we're just picking up rocks and throwing at them, and you just get into the mob mentality. And in one of those things, I grabbed a brick and I fucking threw it at one of those guys, and I see it like barely hit, like missing his head and hitting a garage door. A wooden garage door, and it sounded like bonk, and he just barely like didn't get it in the head. And I kind of like stopped in the middle of the man is like, holy shit, like I almost hit that dude on the head. And even if I wouldn't have killed him with that brick to the head, he wouldn't have fallen down, and the people from my gang or my side would have beaten him up to death.
Whoa. That's
later,
tense, man.
After that whole day, I was like, damn, like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, why am I like fighting people just because they're from another fucking soccer team? Like, am I ready to kill a man because they're from a different soccer team? Like, this makes no sense. And after that, I decided like, okay, enough of street gang shit. This is not for me. This is not me. And I stopped doing those activities. So to some degree, I feel like the San Pedro cactus spirit, who knows all timelines and sees things from the other side of the physical plane, kind of pushed me to go and live that extreme experience so I would just fucking cut the bullshit out and stop living in a way where I'm fighting people for stupid reasons, like a soccer team, like a what, district culture, nationality? What's the million excuses we keep on looking for to hate on others? Like, oh, that's a conservative, that's a liberal, that's a this, that's a that. They're not me, so I'm going to hate on them. I don't think anybody's ready to pick up a brick and throw it at the other side. But it's all just different degrees of separation. So that was a very important lesson for me that both came from life experience. Extreme dive into the negativity and you know, psychedelic medicines.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah. That, man, it sounds like a movie, dude. Like, it's super tense, dude. I can't wait for Chris Dyer, the film. But yeah, I mean, man, what a strange trip, right? I mean, that's kind of almost like a cryptic message pushing you into a intense pivotal moment and you wouldn't have gone if the hallucination or the trip or whatever you want to call it actually pushed you there, right? That's pretty
it had to convince me to go there and do that because it was in the possibilities of things I was doing those days. And yeah, I'm happy I woke up from the dream of, oh, I'm a gang member and I get into fights. Like, that's something I had chosen to define myself as. Like, that's how I identified myself. And sometimes you gotta wake up and be like, oh shit, I'm not that. Like, that's something I've chosen to perceive myself at, but I'm, you know, in the end, what the fuck are we? You know, we're soul experiencing a human life, and there's a bunch of boxes around us, and we gotta, you know, work with them, but also not know that that is us. Like, whatever's speaking to you right now, it's not the, you know, this is not my pure essence. Like, my pure essence is, I guess, like the soul that inhabits this, you know, thing that will last me 80 years or so.
Yeah, the meat machine. Yeah, meat puppet, as right. Duncan Trussell calls it. Sure. Yeah, dude, I mean, like, obviously we had extremely different upbringings and stuff, but, you know, there's so much of that I can relate too. I went through a phase in my probably like 16 to maybe 15 to 18 or something of just choosing aggression, right? Just like trying to be tough. And I went to, similar to you, I went to a private school. So, you know, privileged little white boy kind of thing. I didn't do it tough. I didn't grow up in a really rough environment, but, you know, it was that kind of, I got into loads of fights for a period of time and breaking stuff and vandalizing stuff. It wasn't till a very, you know, very intense psychedelic experience that it was really like, this is, yeah. I mean, I phased out of it, but it wasn't until like a very intense psychedelic experience that it was just like, absolutely not. That is like, what are you doing? So, I don't know, having those, that path, and I guess knowing what you're capable of, knowing the destruction that you could be capable of, is a totally very valid and important life lesson to go through. So I like the way you framed it as well. You know, to understand and really embrace the positivity, I think you do need to flirt with the darkness a bit at some point in your life, right?
Well, you know, this world, I don't think negativity is a bad thing. I think both positive and negative are necessary in this world for God to get the experience that it wants to experience through each and every one of us. Each and every one of us, it's kind of like an avatar for Source to have the experience of what it is to live in the physical plane and have pain and to be what we are and to think what we think, that we still are the soul or the spirit of it, a drop of that ocean that gets to, you know, have choices and go through all the possibilities. So negativity and the possibility of being bad is very important and valuable too. If we didn't have that possibility, like, what the fuck video game are we playing? You know, might as well just stay in the world absolute where we're all love and bliss and consciousness. Like, what's the point of going to a place where you could be the opposite of love and bliss? That's also something interesting to that consciousness. It wants to live it through us. So I think it's important that there's always that option and that exists in the world, but there's too much of it. This world is just like drowning in negativity. When actually I'm exaggerating. I think there's as much good and love and positivity in our world as there is negativity. But for some reason, we like to focus more on the negative. Like, the news is always the negative. When somebody talks to you, usually a negative story about somebody, may it be gossip or some interesting, like, oh shit, this guy fell off his balcony and broke his head. Like, that's more exciting than like, hey, I'm having a nice, pleasant day where I just feel the peace of existence. It's like, okay, great. Good for you. Who cares?
Yeah.
So like, you know, positivity is less spread, even though I think we all have the chance for that in our lives. You know, we all got somebody we love. We all can go to a nice park and see something pretty. Maybe not all of us, like maybe some people don't have that option, but a lot of us have that option. And instead of focusing on that, we focus on like, oh shit, like the World Economic Forum is plotting to fucking turn us all into cyborgs and and control us beyond recognition, which is also a possible future timeline that we could enter and experience if we choose vibrationally. I believe like there's parallel realities in our present and in our future that we vibrate and move into. And if we believe that the future is negative, perhaps we will end up there. And if we believe that the future can be positive and that we deserve to have a positive future, then we will go there. So I think it's important to like give a little bit more energy towards positivity, you know, give a little bit more energy and attention to optimism, to the good things that could happen to humanity if we take our head out of our own asses, We are intelligent enough to pull it off. We are a little bit immature in general, but we are figuring it out. I think each one of us is growing in our own lives, and each generation gets a little bit wiser and smarter. And also the newer generations already come with better software. You know, the newer generations are these like higher dimensional aliens that are coming to planet Earth to, like, you know, balance out the shit that's being thrown at us. Because the negative side, you know, that works for the darkness or whatever you want to call it, or vibrates along with it, they want to win the video game. They want to keep God contained. They want to, like, limit consciousness. They want to be like, oh, humanity is waking up to their potential. They're going to go back to, like, the light. They're going to take one step closer to going back to source or God, or escaping the chains of the physical plane. We got to really chain them down with as much physicality as possible, because we're ruling this video game right now. We got all the powers. We hold the chips or the money that we invented and made all the rules around. They don't want to liberate the people at the bottom. And we're all at the bottom. Unless you're one of the one percenters or less that own all the chips, we're all, you know, the slaves at the bottom in this video game. And I don't think that's fair. I don't think God wants that, ultimately. Perhaps he wants us to experience what it is to have that experience, but I don't think we're bound to stay there forever. And I think it's important that each one of us does the work in our own lives to grow and to raise our vibration into something closer to love and less division and acceptance and unity, so that we can together attract the future where humanity made it, where humanity, you know, got it, and we move to where we should be going. Yeah. So I think that's, like, you know, in each one of ours paths.
Yeah, wonderful. I mean, I couldn't agree more, man. And I also just want to say, I've been watching a few of your, Instagram videos where you're just kind of delivering a message, and I just want to say you've really become a fantastic communicator of you know, spiritual ideas and kind of illustrating those things like positivity that are so important, I think. And it's incredible that you're able to, I don't know, deliver that message so concisely and well. When did
I'm trying my best.
Yeah, man. Fuck yeah. I'm here for it, dude.
I feel very clumsy at many times, because I'm still just like a normal standard dude.
Aren't we all, though, man? I've seen a lot of, you talk a lot about your shamanic journey, your plant medicine journey, this big shift into, diving headfirst into creativity, positivity, spirituality. When did this, when was the pivotal moment apart from that, turning away from the violence path that you were on? When did the journey begin for you?
It was many different episodes, and it was like a little by little of like allowing myself to be me, or to have the positive sides of me to come up and to find my service for others. Psychedelics were always kind of there and they helped me, but I only really went deeper into a shamanic path like around 33 years old. I'm 43 right now. So shamanism's only been the last 10 years of my life. And it's been a very potent decade. And I'm almost taking a little bit of a hiatus from psychedelics right now because, you know.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. You heal. And at one point, it's like, okay, are you healed enough? Like, there's always more healing. But like this constant chasing of like, I'm broken. I want to fix. I'm broken. Right. I want to fix it. At one point, the fixing part is accepting your brokenness. It's like, okay, I'm like kind of broken and I'm imperfect and whatever. But at the same time, I love myself for it. And if I can just be at peace with that, that is the healing. But before that, I'd say like a big change in between the negative and the positive chapters of my life, because say I stopped doing street gang shit, but I was still like going back to Canada and drinking a lot and breaking shit. Like, you know, like me and my friends used to love to, you know, after the nights of drinking the bar, we'd grab a crowbar and go around a neighborhood and break all of the bus shelters. And we were just kind of like, you know, we loved breaking shit.
I did a bit of that too, man.
Yeah, you know, like CKY kind of shit.
Yep,
and just,
yep.
But, you know, but then you're also an asshole to your friends and you're stealing each other's girlfriends, or you're like, you know, just not a good person when you're drunk all the time. So what changed me from that chapter was going tree planting. So in Canada, there's a summer job where anybody could go up north where there's a lot of trees, but also a lot of deforestation. And you live in tents for a couple months and you spend your days planting trees. And that was the first time where I really submerged myself in nature. Like, of course, I understand nature exists. But when you grow up and you live in cities, nature is kind of like a little patch of grass or a random tree here and there. And sure, you do your 1 week trip with your school to check out the rainforest. And then you go back and you go back to the city. Lima is a city of 10 million people. It's like a lot of concrete and gray skies. And, you know, nature is like a little patch in the back of your house, your yard, if you're lucky enough to have one. But going tree planting, all of a sudden, it's just nature. There was no town for hours there, you know, and they're dropping you off in helicopters in like patches of deforested trees, and you're like putting the mini trees in between the fallen trees and, you know, the insects, the dirts, the frogs, and you're just having a little bit more space to be like, oh shit, like this is reality. This is the true face of planet Earth. And whatever the fuck I've been living to till this point, that was age 20, 21. Whatever I've been living up to now was all lies, you know. Right. It's not the true essence of planet Earth. It's human built cultural masks over planet Earth, and this nature is a reality, and I love this nature. I love these trees. I want to help it out. So that was like a little, you know, click in me where I was like, I'm tired of being a drunk asshole. I don't want to be that character anymore. I even changed my name to Carlos Sanchez for a couple of years to kind of disassociate myself from the Chris Dyer I had created, which was like a wild character. And also in tree planting, you're hanging out with a lot of hippies, because like I never really hanged out with much hippies before tree planting. Once again, this is age 21. In Peru, there was no hippies, or at least not in my school. And in college, there were hippies, but like we would make fun of them. It's like, oh, look at that smiley beard. And you throw snowballs at them. And you know, they seem like, you know, losers for being such positive, happy characters instead of badass punks and metalheads like we were. And finally, I'm hanging out with them. And I'm like, oh, shit, these people are actually like quite cool in a different way. And they're into psychedelics, they're into philosophy, they believe spirituality without religion, they're into traveling. I got into it. I was like, oh, these people are cool. And they influenced me to be interested in traveling. And traveling was a big, for me, traveling, like both being in nature for tree planting and traveling were my psychedelic. Like psychedelic could be something you ingest and you have an experience for a couple hours, but life can also be your psychedelics. And nature was my psychedelic, and life was my psychedelic, and traveling. So inspired by these hippies that I was meeting, I decided to hitchhike across Canada from Ontario to British Columbia, which took me 5 days because Canada's a huge country. On like, you know, very little money. And it was very, you know, I've always been spiritual inside. But when you grow up and you ask the adults, hey, what is God? What is spirit? They tell you like, oh, well, Jesus and this culture and this dogma. And then you're like, go to church and you don't really find it there. But in hitchhiking, I kind of found it. Because with hitchhiking, you're there on the road. you don't know who's picking you up. It's all chance. It's all up to the Most High, who will get that tingle and be like, oh, I'm picking up that random hippie, which I had now become, on the side of the road. And what conversation will I have with that random person that picks me up? What lesson will I learn? You know, and the first person that picked me up on that first hitchhiking trip was this woman who had caught her husband cheating. And she found her husband fucking another man. And she was so outraged. She had gotten in her car and she was driving for days and she didn't even want to sleep. And she gave me a really long ride.
Wow.
But it was also very, like, kind of dangerous because she was all cracked out.
Right, right.
But that, I would have never met that kind of character in my normal life. But hitchhiking, that's God speaking to me. Hey. And I was there to console her, to hear her out, to give her some words of wisdom or advice or whatever reflections I could help her in her situation. So vice versa, you know, she's taking a chance. She's picking up a person she doesn't know. And maybe it was the perfect person that she needed to pick up in order for her to, you know, take a step in her healing process. So that was like a big change for me. So tree planting, nature, hitchhiking. After that, I got hooked on traveling and I hitchhiked across Canada and the States a couple times. And then I hitchhiked across Mexico and then I hitchhiked the Hawaiian Islands and so on. And once I finished school, I started working as an artist and I saved enough money to go to Asia for 6 months. And so on. Once my career blossomed and I became a successful artist, opportunities to travel the world started popping up. And yeah, so for me, traveling is such a great way of learning about yourself, learning about the world, and once again, my chance to find the positivity and turn into a good person or a spiritual person, for whatever that means.
Yeah, fantastic. Couldn't agree more. And love travel. And so keen to get back at it because, you know, the last few years it's not really been possible. but yeah, travel completely helped make me who I am as well and really shed some of the old crap. For me, it was like a lesson in realizing that all you really had to do was be nice. All you really had to do was be nice and people will respond really well. People didn't really care about your story. I mean, you know, they do to an extent, but they don't care if you're tough. They don't care if you're, you know, whatever your young ideas of yourself were. All you really had to do was be really nice and friendly to people and you would get that back. If you're closed, you don't get much. If you're open, you get a lot of feedback. So that was a big one for me too.
Right, because when you're traveling, people don't know you. They're taking you at face value. Hmm. They have no prejudgments, or perhaps they got prejudgments because of your race or the way you look. They'd be like, oh, here's a tall, white, handsome man. Perhaps they're arrogant because of their physical beauty. But then they meet you, it's like, oh, they're actually quite nice. And maybe I should stop assuming that a person would act a certain way because of the way they look. And especially in the days before social media, you know, people didn't know who you were. That's why I could change my name in 1 second with hitchhiking and tree planting, is because, like, back in 2001, 2002, like, people, like, these days you meet somebody's like, hey, let me see your Instagram. And then they can, like, look into a little bit of what your normal world is or how you're presenting yourself. Back then, you tell them like, hey, my name is Carlos Sanchez and I'm a good person. It's like, okay, cool. I believe you because I don't know you're Chris Dyer and a fucking asshole. So I like that. You know, it's a good chance to reinvent yourself and to practice being different. If you want to try out different ways of being, if you're tired of being the same story, traveling gives you the chance. You know, I see it the same way for ladies, you know. So girls who perhaps live in a town and they don't want to get a bad rep, but then they go traveling and they can be the town whore if they want to experience that, because nobody knows them there and they get a chance to, you know, explore that side of themselves. So that's healthy too.
Right. I want to ask you about your work with ayahuasca. You know, like you said, over the last 10 years, you've been working with a lot of psychedelics. I've seen you speak a lot about them. And it seems, yeah, you've done a lot of work with the really heavy ones, or the strong, potent plant medicines or psychedelics or animal medicines. Is ayahuasca your, I suppose, preferred medicine, or the one that you've been most drawn to, or the one you work with the most?
Yeah, I'd say ayahuasca is my, it's hard to say favorite because it's never that pleasurable.
Right.
Sorry. But it's my main medicine or path or ally, because I feel she lives in me. I think she was living in me as a guide before I even took her. Hmm. And by the time I took her, she's like, hey, we were already homies on the other side of reality. Before you were born, we were friends. I don't know. I don't understand it. But she's one of my guides that already is part of my configuration. So then when I started accessing that portal, it was her chance to come in more clearly to this version of me, and for her to show me who I really am, show me what God is, show me what the reality is, and with that understanding, act accordingly. And be a better version of myself and clean out some of the traumas that I, you know, have picked up on this lifetime. As for other medicines, I have tried other medicines, and some are not for me. Some are too strong for me. Others work fine. I don't know. You can ask if you want me to, like, expand on any particular one, but my homie.
How many times have you sat in ceremony for ayahuasca?
I think I'm at 44 ceremonies.
Oh wow, massive. Yeah. What is I was wondering whether you could maybe expand on the importance of ceremony, and maybe kind of what is a typical ceremony like? I've done it twice. I haven't broken through either time. I don't know whether that's just like energetically or whether the dose wasn't right. But yeah, I'm still pretty keen to have a really, you know, have it take me and have it, you know, just, yeah. Anyway, can you maybe speak a little bit about the importance of ceremony and what the experience is like?
Right. I really loved learning about ceremony, because before doing ayahuasca ceremonies, whenever I do psychedelics, it would be like, all right, with my homies or perhaps just in nature, and you do some mushrooms and then you feel something, but then you're doing activities, or, you know, same with acid. It's not like you can do shrooms and acid in a ceremonial style, but till I did ayahuasca, I had not experienced that. So we're hearing a lot about set and setting these days through books like How to Change Your Mind and then the series on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And the importance of, where are you doing these, with what intention, with who, dosages, music, like what's happening around you influencing the trip. And I'd say a ceremony is a very potent set and setting. First and foremost, at least a Peruvian-style ayahuasca ceremony, it's in the dark. So you're not even seeing anything in the physical plane anymore. It's a blank screen for ayahuasca to show up and do her dance, if that's meant to be in that particular ceremony. And many ceremonies, she will not dance and show me the DMT aspect of it. Sometimes it's just like, you know, psychological conversations, you know, psychotherapy with the mama telling me, like, so what's your relationship with this person? Oh yeah, you cut the cords. Okay, good. Do you see it clearly now? Okay, cool. Next lesson, what's your relationship with this trauma? And like, and then she just goes over all these different topics to help you see yourself in a more three-dimensional kind of way, or fourth dimensional, or maybe fifth dimensional, I don't know. But you learn a lot about yourself, and you learn what you have to do in order to live a better life and to have less suffering and to help humanity and to be of service, or just the idea that we're here to be of service to others. Like, that might not be the main concept for our lives many times. But through ayahuasca, it's like, oh shit, I am, first and foremost, I am not this thing. I am beyond this thing. And second of all, I'm not here to just live my life and take care of myself. I'm here to serve others, because others are me and others are God in a different body. And harming others is harming myself, you know. But you see so much more clearly in that space. So back to ceremony, to be in the darkness, to have a guide that sets a lot of comfort and beautiful music that sets a mood that perhaps can get you really high up, but then calms you down if, like, your fucking heart's, you know, if everybody's getting really, like, agitated, he's got to put some music to bring it back down, you know? That's something that won't happen on a random Spotify playlist. And also is making sure that no one is, like, losing control. If somebody loses control, starts screaming, you got to go and, like, calm them down or deal with the demon that needs to, you know, come out. What else? Yeah, just somebody to help you walk to the bathroom. If you can't walk to the bathroom, to have some kind of angelic being walk you through it and know that you're always safe and that you won't just walk out and fall and crack your head and die. You know, like, it's important to have a really traditional, also, if possible, setting where, before the ceremony is starting, to give it up to the Most High, to call in the angels, the four directions, and protect that bubble, maloka or tent or space or wherever it's happening. You need to call in, like, interdimensional beings to protect it from demonic forces infiltrating, because there's a portal being opened and a lot of things could show up, especially like whatever, like, you know, where is this ceremony happening? Is this ceremony happening in the rainforest, where the consciousness of the rainforest is less invaded by human culture? It's more about nature. It's more about the plants and the river and the insects. But if you're doing it in the city, there's a lot of interdimensional beings that, you know, maybe there's even ghosts or other kind of dark energy that are still floating around, and all of a sudden it's there. That's why, like, a good ceremonial setting has to protect you with a bubble. The shaman should blow you with tobacco to give you angelic protection, and has to keep an eye on you throughout the whole process, so that you are protected in your process of, you know, releasing your own demons and traumas. It's like, it's deep surgery, and somebody's got to keep an eye on you. Not necessarily, like, if you can, you could learn to do it without the shaman too, but so far I always prefer if somebody's got an eye on me, so that if I get out of control, which I always hope I don't, but if I do, you know, somebody's got me.
Yeah. Have there been any particular experiences or visions or revelations that have really stood out to you, or been really important in your development, or just kind of blown your mind or opened your heart? And I guess more broadly, like, what has ayahuasca really done for you in your spiritual development?
Well, yeah, for sure. I've seen a lot of things. And I have a really hard time bringing it back, because once I'm there, it's almost like you're stung by an interdimensional spider. I'm just like, and like, I like the logical part of me is almost like sedated. It's like the mind, Chris, is like put to the side. Okay. Like the mind that's like, ooh, I should do a painting about this because all my followers will really like it, and then I'll be popular and all that fucking bullshit. It's like, hey, you stupid asshole, chill out here. Chris is just being Saul right now, and he's being shown the secrets of the universe. And then I come back and I don't even know what to do with that information or really how to express it. And the medicine has told me, like, don't worry about doing homework during your ceremony space. We will allow it to come out through you in a very organic, subconscious kind of way. So when I'm painting, I'm not thinking like, oh, what did I see in my last ayahuasca ceremony? I'm going to paint that thing as if I could even remember it or had a photographic memory. Plus it fucking keeps on changing. And it's like, I don't even know what I'm seeing. It's just like energy explosions and mandalic worlds that seem like a matrix where there's villages of beings and pods of consciousness from another dimension, but I don't actually see them. I feel them. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of feeling. There's a lot of feeling and knowing. And sometimes the visuals can complement, but the visuals don't really tell me so much. It confuses me a lot of times. I don't know. Like in 44 ceremonies, I've had a lot of different visions. And then there's the, you know, the DMT moments and the Changa moments, and that will take me back to that place like in 1 second. I was like, holy shit, I'm here. What the fuck? And then I got to come back in 15 minutes and try to make some sense out of it. But it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't really matter. Like, once again, I'm not going to those places so that the human Chris can, like, you know, achieve some kind of goal or painting or purpose or sound cool to his peers in the knowledge of something secret. I'm just trying to understand the nature of reality and to find some kind of comfort knowing that right here in a really thin veil, there's another universe with beings who back me up. And I feel they love me and I feel they want to heal me. It's almost like, yeah, the last time I did I haven't done DMT a lot. It's not like a medicine I've done a lot. And Changa, I had done a little bit, and it kind of like, Changa seems almost like the doorstep of DMT. But somebody had sent me some Changa and I did it recently, and I thought it was just going to be like a mellow vibe, and fuck, all of a sudden I was in DMT world, like, oh God. And it was like, you know, because I know that place is like, well, you know what this is about, kind of, not really, but you know where you've thrown yourself into. So just like, you know, enjoy it while it lasts and just like be happy that this other dimension exists. When I'm in that place, I feel like I'm taking Chris to the, I feel like Chris, or at least my body or my energetical body or whatever the fuck this is, it's like I take it to the car repair, you know, to the garage. And all of a sudden, boom, I'm in the car garage. And the mechanics are like, oh, shit, Chris is here. We only got 15 minutes / eternity since time's irrelevant here. But Chris is here. Let's repair him. And they go to town on me and they move things around. And they take something out. They put something in. They, like, put in a couple codes. And then it fades away. And I'm like, whoa, what the fuck, you know, like, that's incredible. Like, I don't even understand, but, you know, it's so incredible. So yeah, in response to your question, like, yeah, I've had different ayahuasca ceremonies take me different levels of deepness, but I've had some ayahuasca ceremonies that were so strong that I'm in the other dimension for hours, and it gets really exhausting on my body, because at the same time that I'm like in another dimension, realizing that I'm God in a video chair controlling the avatar of Chris, and I'm the same God that is also in the body of everybody else, and it's just like a giant video game in a way of speaking. At the same time, I'm realizing the secrets of the universe and the nature of reality, I'm feeling really fucking sick. My body is like, what the fuck is happening? Why are you in a different dimension? I don't understand. I just want to puke. Somebody please stop this anxiety and pain and nausea. Please somebody stop it. And you're just like, wow, like, what? I'm God? What the fuck? Like, this can't be. And God repeatedly is trying to nail, like, yes, you're God. But I'm not saying me, Chris Dyer, because you are also God. We're all God, but we're God with amnesia in this, like, super cool, high technology virtual reality game. So, yeah, I don't know. I could keep on going on forever about
I mean,
it's on the other side of reality.
When you have these, I mean, just those little bits that you're describing, like, God in the control room expressing himself through the meat body that is Chris Dyer and stuff. I mean, these are it's hard to explain to people who haven't gone through it, but it's like these experiences, I mean, at least mine with DMT or big doses on what various other psychedelics that I've done, but they are so real. They're so intensely real. Like, it's not just a dream. I woke up from a dream. I mean, it feels more real than a dream.
Exactly.
I mean, what
when
do
you're
you
there, you're like, oh shit, the other reality is the fake reality. This is where I'm really awake. Like, what the fuck? Like, it's like I got out of the dream and this is the dream. It's weird, huh?
What do you like, how do you kind of process that? And I suppose what do you do with that information? Like, what, it's so intense. It's so system overload. And, you know, I think there's a very good reason why we don't experience that 24/7, you know, I mean, survival being the main one. you know, cause we're physical for a reason as well, but you know, it's so magical to be able to get those, glimpses, those lessons, those blessings, whatever you want to call them. But yeah, I mean, what do you do with such overwhelming information and how does that integrate into your everyday life? What's it done for you after, outside of the experience?
Right. I believe there's a purpose for us to not to know the true nature of reality. To know that we're God with amnesia. And even when we're told it's so hard to believe, it's a good thing because then we can keep on playing the video game to some degree. But knowing that it's a video game, knowing that really like the whole world could explode and we could all die and the Illuminati could win and all the bad things could happen. And it still doesn't matter because we're always in the hand of God. Like this whole reality, planet Earth and the whole galaxy and universe and as infinite as it looks, is just like a marble in the hand of God. And when it's done, because it won't last forever because only eternity is eternity outside of the bubble, then we go to eternity and we see like, oh shit, that was just not the true reality. It was a reality and we lived it as real as we can feel it. If anything, this feels so real. It seems impossible that anything else could exist outside of the physicality of this world. But I guess once again, knowing that this is not the real reality, there's a sense of safeness to me. It's like, hey, if I die, cool. Like, I don't want to suffer while living. Like, no one likes to suffer. But then again, knowing that it's just a life is some kind of school where we learn how to become good and go back to love. Like, I think God wanted to throw himself in a video game where to win it, he had to go back to being himself. But he starts like a baby, not knowing anything, and throughout lifetimes and generations and a million experiences through a billion trillion people, eventually he realizes like, oh shit, it's me. Like, I was me all along. So I think it's kind of like a hilarious thing to be in the middle of it. And it's so big and it lasts so long, we can't even see it. But once we get out of the bubble and we're outside of time and space and we're like, oh shit, like all of physical reality is nothing but a virtual reality video game that we're playing as God, then it's like, oh, well, if it's just a game, let's have some fun. I'm God turned into human. What can I do in the physical plane? Let's do some fun things. Let's go out skateboarding. Let's have a couple beers. Let's have sex. Let's have fun. Of course, doing all these things without hurting anybody, of course. You know, if anything, bringing joy to other people because they're also you outside of the bubble. It's like, hey, I'm bringing a little joy to this person. And they don't even know that I know that they are me. And it doesn't even matter. At the end, once we all escape the bubble, and we're like, oh shit, high five. Thank you for giving me that beautiful smile on the street on that one instance. It really cheered me up and made a difference in the video game. And then we nailed back into oneness and nothing really matters. We just kind of like live in bliss for the end of time or eternity. The thing is like, once you go to those deep ayahuasca places where you get out of time and space, it's almost like you already experience what happened once all of reality ended. Because right. that's the place right. you go back once all of the physical world ended. So it's almost like you're at the end of the video game where you already won the video game. So that's another thing that helps me live a better life. The video game, there's no way God is not going to win the video game.
Right, so, right.
No matter what ups and downs and bumps and drama, plot twist he's given to himself to keep it spicy and interesting, you know, at the end, we still win. We still go back to infinity, eternity, bliss, and consciousness. And if anything, we will miss this fucking place of suffering and struggle and turmoil. So knowing that, let's enjoy the fucking ride. Let's enjoy the fucking video game and make the most out of it and try our best and forgive ourselves for our mistakes and you know, everything bad we do, like, well, you know, let's realize it and try our best the next day too.
Right.
Because God would never judge itself forever. It's like, oh, I made a mistake. Okay, reset button. Let's go again. You know, next life.
Yeah, yeah. I find with, you know, substances like ayahuasca, I haven't had huge experience with ayahuasca, a little bit, but I've spoken to many people that have, but I have done a fair bit of DMT. But I find that, I mean, some of the kind of concepts and ideas that you're talking about, which I really, really like, you know, like the life is a video game. And then once we, you know, in a video game, you can even be like, the players can be shooting each other and killing each other and it's cruel and horrible, but then you turn off the game and you're like, ah, man, you're an asshole. That was fun anyway. And it's, I do like these ideas of like after death crossing over and actually the souls reuniting and just being like, wow, you were prickly. Wow. You made it a bit tricky, but hey, here we all are together. But, so back to the kind of ayahuasca thing I was just about to say is I find with those, chemicals, medicines, whatever, it does seem to be accompanied with a loving message, the loving hand of warmth or guidance, therapy. Often it will show me the work I need to do with and deliver the message with love, which is I think the really incredible thing about that stuff. There are other kind of substances, like I've had some pretty intense, pretty like really surprisingly deep experiences on things like ketamine, and I think it's a really, really, really interesting, exciting substance, but I don't really feel that there's any kind of spirit to it. I don't really feel like there's any kind of guidance. It seems like you can kind of play with, if you go deep enough, you can almost play with the fabric of reality, but it doesn't particularly seem like there's any deeper purpose or loving nature to it. Not necessarily there's no love, like it's not cold or anything, but it doesn't have the cradling love that you know, DMT or ayahuasca might have. I was wondering with some of those kinds of ideas, you know, people can kind of get lost with those things, thinking that the world is a video game, so nothing matters, you know. Things like nihilism can kind of come in, or if you've got sociopathic tendencies, a lot of those ideas do come very close to possibly not really leading to a harmonious existence for some people. Have you had many experiences with people kind of just on the other side of that tightrope walking or substances maybe re-traumatizing people or getting God delusions or anything like that?
Yeah, it's so tricky because these are such potent technologies. There's definitely a dark side, and you have to have enough wisdom to learn the good lessons from it without, you know, thinking that all of a sudden you're so woke that you got a license to do whatever the fuck you want. So when I'm coming down from like a strong trip, ayahuasca, let's say, I still gotta like stand up and, you know, let's say walk to the river to, you know, bathe myself and wake up and reconstitute into the physical plane. And all of a sudden a bee can sting my hand. Actually, two different times where yeah. I had ceremonies, I've had bees sting the same hand. And it's almost like a reminder of like, okay, yeah, you're eternal and you're safe and nothing really matters in the end because it's just a video game, but you're here right now and getting stung in your hand, that matters to you because it hurts and you don't want to hurt. And so in that way, you're reminded that in the physical planes, there is parameters, there is gravity. I need to take a step in order to move. You can't just like think that because you're like something else in a different dimension that what you are here doesn't matter anymore and that you can just go out there and murder people and it doesn't really matter. And it seems like some people get that message, or perhaps they get infiltrated by the wrong spirits. And they, you know, and there is some balances. Like there has been instances in my own family where I had an uncle that did LSD or too much LSD at a young age when he perhaps was too sensitive and he was crazy for the rest of his life. And that's a sad story. You know, I always knew him as, you know, crazy Uncle Alan, and you visit him and he doesn't really like get reality so well. Like, he understands who I am, but something's off. So that was always a warning in my own family, is like, hey, like, don't like short circuit yourself with these things. I'm sensitive and I try not to break Chris in the process of awakening him. So for example, when I did Bufo, I was like, oh shit, I almost broke Chris on that one.
Oh yeah, that's
don't do Bufo anymore.
That's like intense, it's stuff.
Yeah, it's too sharp of a knife, and it's even hard to explain how sharp it is. And I would say that the entities from that dimension are more masculine, not the masculine and feminine, like I don't want to say masculine bad and feminine good, but say ayahuasca is like a mom. Chris, I'm gonna beat you up, but I love you and this is for your healing. The Bufo entities were more like stern grandfather, is like, I'm gonna chop you into little pieces and hope for the best, you know, like you're gonna have to, you know, give up into death right now and be ready to die, and you know, and if not, too bad. Yeah. And it's like, sorry, grandfather entities from a different dimension, like I can't sleep now because I think I'm gonna die. And I need sleep. I'm a sensitive being, and a human being requires rest in order to, you know, survive. And I feel if I sleep now that Freddy Krueger is going to kill me. And then I'm going to get sucked into the void of emptiness forever. And perhaps my body doesn't feel like dying. Perhaps I'm ready to die, but my body is like, no, I don't want to die. You know, there's still a survival instinct in my body that I'm fighting, and I don't want to fight myself. So perhaps that medicine's not for me. In the end of that story, I did find peace and healing and liberation, but it required other shamanic practices to close up my DMT body that was left way too open. And I was able to sleep, and it was a really blissful week of interdimensional conversations. You know,
yeah.
If you ever enough before,
I have. It, yeah, it yeah. Lasts. It's you yeah. Know, oh yeah. Two weeks lasts. After, I was feeling different. Probably right. About 2 weeks after. Yeah, very very strong stuff.
Right, and as for ketamine, I've done it enough, like not a ton, because I don't like to do it so much in party settings, because it almost seems like, you know, not that I haven't done it, but it's just I don't want to turn into like a another Denver party goer.
Yeah. Wobbly gremlin.
But it feels like, once again, in the right set and setting, intention and amount, it seems like perhaps even if there's no spirit in ketamine, which, you know, depends on who's observing it, I'm not going to be the one to say that there's no spirit in ketamine, but perhaps the ketamine is some kind of like void of emptiness. If life is a video game and there's the video game player, which perhaps is God or higher interdimensional versions of ourselves, and the video game is us, the physical Chris and Jack, perhaps ketamine is turning off the TV. Emptiness. Nothing's happening. And in that emptiness, while floating in the emptiness, it's like, well, I'm not quite God and I'm not quite the video game avatar. Perhaps there's something to be discovered too. It's cool that it exists. It's cool that there's so many versions of ourselves that we can experience through these very potent portals and be like, holy shit, this is me being not me. And that's one more thing that God wants to experience through us, yeah. You know?
Can give you a fresh new perspective on what being me is when you're not me for a bit. what do you think? So for you personally, I suppose, you know, we've kind of talked about ideas of God. I think we kind of probably have a similar interpretation of such a concept, you know, multiple drops in the one ocean source, I think is a really nice word to kind of describe it. How deep is, I suppose, your belief, comprehension, relationship with God? And I suppose, what is the end goal? What do you hope to eventually get to through all this psychedelic work? What kind of divine crystallization of Chris Dyer are you working toward?
Yeah, those are two big questions. But I guess they tie in because I guess like if the goal of the video game is to go back to source, I guess the goal of the video game is to reach an enlightenment where your consciousness is at least closer to the consciousness of God. Perhaps there has been humans on this planet, maybe Buddha or Jesus or many yogis that we will never know about because they just stayed in a cave, blissed out. Perhaps there's been humans that have tapped into the ultimate consciousness of God. Once again, there's just God is everything. And there's so many floors on the building. Like, for example, ayahuasca takes you to one floor. But then there's the bufo floor that perhaps is like a little bit higher and there's less to see because it's all light and oneness and nothingness but everythingness. And perhaps the true God is past anything we could sense. So I don't know if any human has attained that level of becoming God in consciousness where they've gone past the bufo. You know, perhaps bufo was the top of the floor. Perhaps there's more to it. Like, I couldn't even absorb the bufo floor. Like, I don't remember what happened on my bufo thing. Like, there's a video of me taking it, and I'm on the floor fucking shaking. And sometimes in dreams, I feel the expanse of light and eternity and angelic realms that barely even have shapes, but maybe a little bit. But perhaps there's more after that. So I don't know if the goal is to go back home to that source where we're just all... at least getting to the stage of being loving people, to not have negative emotions towards others would be nice. What am I trying to achieve in my life? I would love to live my life without no fear. Like, because we all have fear of something. Sometimes we can have fear of like places we don't know. Like, I've been to places where I have fear. Like, I've gone and painted in Palestine, for example, and I went not thinking I was going to be fearful. I was like, oh, I'm going to go to Palestine and I'm going to like paint for these refugees and it's going to be awesome. They're going to be so happy. And once I'm there, I'm like feeling kind of nervous because they don't understand who I am or what my culture is. They just see like a white dreadlock tattooed dude and they're all fucking with me, throwing things at me, pulling my dreads, cheering things I don't understand, which I later on was told that were insults. They just didn't understand me. They perhaps feared me. So in their fear of me, they created an environment that even though I was there to serve them and paint their neighborhood, I felt kind of like not safe. And I had my girlfriend there too at the time. And I was like, oh shit, like I can totally see them checking out my girlfriend. And perhaps that culture doesn't have so much respect for females. And so I am aware that I can be afraid on this plane still. Like if all of a sudden, like a bunch of ruffians break into my house and point a gun to my head, I'm going to be afraid. I guess my goal would be to be so confident that the other dimension really exists and it's the true reality of my being, that even if I throw myself in a terrible jail hell, I would be at peace and I wouldn't be afraid. I would be calm. Or perhaps enlightenment is a self-acceptance of oneself that's so great that I can be afraid and it's okay to be afraid and I accept myself for it. So you know what? I'm afraid right now. I do not understand what's happening. I perhaps feel threatened by the unknown or unsafe, but you know what? I love myself through that too. It's okay to have human emotions. If not, why did I make myself human? So perhaps my ultimate goal is to accept myself so much that there's nothing I could do wrong. Even if it looks right, like, oh, I shouldn't be insecure about myself, about this and that. You know what? Accept myself too. I'll accept my insecure self. That's good too. I love you, Chris, and your petty human existence. You know, I'm trying to figure it out. But basically, I guess we all just want to be happy. And I think we become happy when we're not afraid, when we're comfortable in our own skin, when we're doing good to others, when we're living in love, you know, serving one another and not dividing ourselves and being like, these are the bad ones and we're the good ones. Like, you know, I don't want to have negative emotions towards anybody. I still do. People fuck with me. People steal from me. People have cheated me repeatedly. People have used my name to get up and totally defamated me and made me look like a bad person. Like, and I get angry. I get angry at it. It's like, this is not fair. Like, what did I do? I was just trying to help. And then people took advantage. And then I got to go back to like, well, can you live your life being angry at people, hating people? Like, no, I want to love everybody. I want to love the people who fucked me over too. And it's not easy. I'm trying my best.
Yeah.
Or at least I'm going to try to accept myself that I can't love every day, because you just can't force those things. You got to be honest. You got to be honest with yourself. You can't lie to yourself. If you're feeling like, fuck that guy, that's how you're feeling. But hopefully I can also allow my heart to let it go. Remember that that is also God trying to teach me a lesson through a different human being. And hopefully eventually I can just be like, oh, we're all just God in this video game. And who gives a shit? It doesn't matter in the end. I forgive him. Go and do the best with your life. You did what you did to me. Blessings to you. And let's move on, because I just want to live in peace. So, yeah, perhaps that's the goal for myself, you know, to find some peace, some relaxation, some self-acceptance, and a lot of love.
Do you think some of those negative things of people using your name or trying to cheat you, whatever, I mean, is that just something that comes along with kind of a degree of fame? Because, like, I mean, you're very you're extremely successful in your art practice. You've got a huge audience. You've got a lot of people, and also wearing your heart on your sleeve, being open. You know, maybe that is just a byproduct of having that much access to that many human beings. You know,
yeah, being public is a situation. Basically, you know. I guess being famous is cool for like a bit when people are like, oh, I recognize you and I think you're cool. And then you're like, oh, cool. Somebody outside of myself thinks that's cool. Maybe now I can allow myself to be cool or to feel good. The goal is to just know that you're great. Make people think you're the coolest artist in the world or the biggest fucking piece of shit of the world. At the end of the day, what I've learned through both good and bad experiences is like all that matters is what I think about myself. Right. And that was a hard lesson because I had to go to hell and have a lot of people think that I'm a really bad person in order for me to really know like, hey, Chris, you know you're a good person. You can't let the external people outside yourself define you. But that also goes for the positive. When people think like, oh, Chris Dyer is so wise and so cool. And so that's like, great. That's great that you think that about me, but that doesn't matter because you don't really live inside me. Only I live inside me, and only I know my goods and my bads. But yeah, when you throw yourself and you become a public character, all of a sudden you got this cartoon character that's not even you. It's just the, you know, this person you're presenting is like, hey, I'm this person. I do some art. Maybe I look cool with my dreadlocks, or I cut them off and now I look normal. And then the filter of each person will make a character judgment. It's like, oh, he cut his hair. Maybe he's cleaned up his act. Or, oh, he's got dreadlocks. Maybe he smokes hella weed. I don't know. Everybody's got their own, like, judgments that go along appearances. Like, oh, he's a male. Oh, he's white. So maybe he feels like he's cooler than other people. Like, people have their own interpretation of you, even just because of appearances. And then you can tell them, like, hey, I think that we're all gone. And be like, oh, that guy's hella arrogant. So at the end, what other people think of you doesn't matter. And, you know, sometimes I wish I wasn't public or I wasn't famous. Like, I just want to live a peaceful life where I'm doing my art. Unfortunately, in order to live from your art, you got to be well known. And then people are like, oh, I know Chris Dyer's art. I want to buy his painting. I want to hire him for my museum. I want to buy his clothing. And that allows me to live my abundance, you know, live in a comfortable house, have a nice studio, afford a computer that can talk to you, etc. But then the real, when I've looked at the purpose for me to be public or famous or whatever, because I had a way out. When I got canceled a couple years ago, I felt so betrayed that I was like, fuck it. Like, you know, I've given decades of my life to be of service to a community. And then as soon as somebody says that I'm a bad person, so many people went with it and they fucking pummeled me in the ground and they broke my heart. Why should I stand up and go back there and be of service? There's a part of me that was really bitter. I was like, fuck all these people. I'm just going to be a farmer in Peru, do my art. I'll live blessed. I'll be in the sun. I'll drink some beers and whatever. You know, it doesn't really matter if I'm famous or not. But the real purpose that I observed was like, but you didn't come to fucking planet Earth to hide in a farm and to not be of service. You got a potent soul. You got potent medicine. You got a mission, and you can't let lies destroy you. You got to get back on your horse and go back into the battle. The reason why you're public is so you can go and help people. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter if I'm abundant or got money or popular or not, if I'm not just doing that for self-service so I can feel cool, so I can buy a car. That doesn't matter. What matters is that whatever I do helps people. Be like, hey, Chris Dyer, you know, got his heart broken this month. But then the next month he felt better. And then the next month he found a new girl. And that means that when I get my heart broken, perhaps I could be like him. Or he worked hard to create an art career of self-expression of being a dork. Maybe I can do that too. So whatever the fuck I'm doing, I hope that people can use it. May it be my art as a mirror for themselves, or my words and reflections that I share whenever I you know, can be coherent enough to do that, or conversations like we're having right now. I hope that whatever Chris Dyer, the public famous artist, can do is help people. Then this matters. Then my life has purpose. Then me putting myself once again in the public eye and making myself vulnerable to attacks, you know, of, you know, defamation or people stealing from me or etc. The things that you got to go through when you have power. When you got power, people want that power. And they will take it sometimes in a nice way. Sometimes they'll take it in a bad way. And I accept it. And perhaps I'll be attacked more in my life. But from being attacked and getting back up, I know that I will still will live, and that I'll still be here to serve those who are, you know, resonant with my brand of medicine.
Yeah.
And it's not for everyone.
Right? Yeah. Dude, you've copped rocks to the head, man. You can, it's just another rock. Right. It's just another rock to a different kind of head.
Everything's a lesson, you know?
Totally. Chris, I mean, I could talk with you. There's so much more I'd love to talk with you about, but I'll let you go. We didn't even really get into your art at all, but I would love to just kind of finish on just one kind of thing with your art. There's the art making side. You put your heart and soul into the kind of art you make, but you've built a bit of an empire with your work. You've diversified across multimediums, murals, skateboard decks, NFTs, merchandise, all sorts of stuff, and you've really built a huge company, I suppose, a really successful business out of your art. I was wondering, just kind of on success, whether you have any kind of words of wisdom to artists out there on maybe just kind of how to take the reins of their own creative practice, get a bit more entrepreneurial, and have the balls to kind of be successful.
Yeah. I'd say with more money and more success comes more responsibility. It's, more money, more problems. And it's good to be successful. It's the nature of a human being to want to always strive and keep on growing and do more. I'd say to the young artist, don't compare yourself to me or to anybody and be like, oh, only when I get to that stage, I'll be happy. Because, what if you don't get to that stage? Will you never be happy? Can you be happy right now in whatever stage you are at? I'd say each little step in my career, because my career didn't happen in a day. It's not like all of a sudden, like, boom, I was Chris Dyer and everybody loved me. I took like years being an unknown artist that was like doing graphics in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, trying to like get the attention of California. And still, I wouldn't say I'm well known in the world of skate art or the world of muralism. Visionary art all of a sudden took off. But when I started doing visionary art, I did not know I was doing visionary art. I was far away from the people who were like promoting it. Once again, West Coast, United States, California, Seattle, that's where visionary art was at, and the festivals. And I'm in Eastern Canada, far away. And I didn't have no money to get out to California and be like, hey guys, I'm here too. Please, somebody give me some attention. But once again, visionary art wasn't even popular back then. So it's like, who am I trying to impress? Like, there was not a lot of a scene. There was no webpage, there was no brands, festivals barely had it. You were just doing it because that's who you were. It's like, I need to express this spiritual journey I'm going through. And I don't think it's the popular thing, but this is who I am. So if anything, I'd say like, be you, do your thing, visionary or whatever the fuck is your thing. Just do your thing, find yourself and expand. And when it comes to business, yeah, you can manifest anything with hard work and a good product and good people around you. And getting out there and meeting the right scenes or public. And these days with social media, it seems like a lot easier / perhaps there's so much that you got a lot more competition too. You can achieve your goals. Enjoy every single step to the bigger goals you got. And know that the bigger you get, the more fucking homework you'll get. And you'll end up on a fucking office chair all day long like me and never painting. I paint so little now. Like, right. Back when I was a nobody artist, I would paint like all day because I had fucking nothing else to do. There was no emails to answer because no one is writing me. Now people write me DMs and emails all day. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
And it's cool to be like, like everybody wants to work with me, but it's a lot of fucking homework to decide like, okay, I'll go here, I go there, I gotta figure it out. There's a lot of office homework to running businesses because I got Posse Creations, the clothing brand, and I got my art and my workshops, and then there's just like life painting, and then there's the Galactic Gang NFT project, which is a whole thing in itself. Then I got my podcast show, Chris Dyer's Creative Friends. So there's like a lot of branches to my tree, and I love them all. They're all very creative and fun, but it leaves me like very little time for me to do a painting that takes me a whole year, right. And I'm working towards that. I'm trying to I'm in the illusion that I will get so successful that then I can say no to everything and just, you know, afford a studio. Like, I got a studio in the back, but I got to build it up. It's going to cost me several tens of thousands of dollars to build it up. But it's my goal. Mm. And once I got my perfect studio, I can do a giant canvas that takes me a whole year to paint and just work on that. And hopefully I can also have so much money that I don't have to go out there and do so many jobs. So I'm getting to that point, but there's a lot of foundation block pieces I have to put there so that the machine can keep on running on automatic without me like being there at every turn.
Right.
I'm figuring it out, though, and it's been decades that I've been trying to figure it out. But I think I'll get there, and I'll be back at doing canvas work. And till then, murals is a lot quicker to put out, and I can do big, beautiful things that actually make me more money.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot I could say to the young artists and encouragement of their own career. I do whole workshops. Even the business day of my workshop, it's like, you know, 3 or 4 hours of me just like, should do this, you shouldn't do that, you should do. And I've had to learn it all by myself because I never went to a workshop that taught me how to be an artist. I just kind of like figured it out by trying a million things, and most things didn't work. So I lost a lot of time by doing things that didn't work out.
Yeah.
But I'm finding the things that do work out, and I'm happy to share them with others, because like, how does it hurt me to tell a young artist like, hey, don't do that, do this. Mm. And then they find their success quicker. How does that hurt me?
Like,
yeah. I don't think so. I think if more people are doing art and they're happy and that's a vibration and we all help each other be happy, that's a happier world. And hopefully also people remember like, hey, Chris Dyer helped me when I was a young artist. So I was still, help him when he's down. I don't know.
Great attitude, man. I love it. I really love it. I think that's the best. That's the only way, really, isn't it? It's good. I love it. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for coming on and making the time, man. Your work is incredible. You're incredibly inspiring. And above all else, you know, your message is just wonderful. Really, really great philosophy and way to live your life. And it's contagious. It's good. I feel good. I feel wonderful. Hey. So yeah.
That's some energy.
of course, man. Again, thank you so much. And is there anything anywhere you want to direct anyone or to find your stuff or buy prints or anything like that?
Sure. If you want to find me, I try all the social medias. I hate TikTok, but sometimes I throw shit there. But mostly you can find me on Instagram at Chris_Dyer. I got a webpage, posicreations.ca, as in Canada. I got a web store with cool products, clothing, stickers, patches, prints, skateboards, etc. That's positivecreations.net. If you're interested in the Galactic Gang with a K, the first K, galacticgang.com, or just look for our NFTs on OpenSea. What else? Oh yeah, my podcast, Chris Dyer's Creative Friends. If you're into cool podcasts like this, I do a podcast where I interview all my artist friends who are fucking awesome. And I think I'm at episode 63 at this point. So
excellent.
It's on YouTube. Yeah, just put Chris Dyer podcast and you'll find it. And what else can I plug? Yeah, I'm not going to Australia quite yet. Well, I've been a couple times in 2012 for the eclipse, and I was there 2018 for Earth Frequency and Rainbow Serpent. And I also taught something at the Byron Bay area, Paradise One. That's like 2018. So hopefully I'll return one day to Australia. But till then, I send you my love.
Awesome,
and,
man.
See you out there in the world.
Fantastic. Thanks, buddy. Really appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.
Blessings.